Welcome to Accounting Influencers, the podcast for accounting leaders and influencers who want to know exactly what makes the good firms great and the great accountants world class. Let's get today's show started with your host and founder of the BD Academy, Rob Brown.
Hi, welcome to the show, and I'm delighted to have with me today an old friend, Mr. Carl Reeder. Carl, hello to you.
Hey, Rob, it's an absolute pleasure to join you on the podcast.
The pleasure is all yours and slightly mine as well, Carl. Now, we've known each other a while, Carl. Just tell us a little bit about your background and your areas of expertise.
I am probably the world's worst accountant, and I fell into it. So I guess those two answers to the question you've given kind of disqualify me in some people's eyes. But hey, I left school before my GCSEs. I wasn't particularly academic. And in fact, I now know that I suffered from ADHD. I've got what's known as adult ADHD. So that was a reason. And I had to do something with myself. So I ended up taking an apprenticeship in hairdressing before doing my GCSEs. So it was the most unlikely route into accountancy. Went back to school, did my GCSEs, applied for three jobs. Two were at accountancy firms, one was in the army, and I landed into accountancy. Square peg into a round hole, but continued plugging away, got me qualifications. Fast forward a good few years, and here I am now. I'm co-owner of D&T and Taxco. So D&T are a good mid-sized firm, employ about 60 staff members, specialising in franchising. Taxco is a very low-cost accounting service. It's 21st century accounting at 1950s prices. But I've also done a fair bit on the side. So I've written a couple of books, written some columns, speak on radio when they let me, effectively a mouthpiece for rent, I guess, Rob.
You are, and you're an influencer as well, Carl. What kind of state do you think the accounting profession's in right now? Because I know you'll call it how it is.
I would say it's torn. There's at least two, if not three, very distinct camps. You've got the vast majority of a profession. So these are the guys that we don't come across on LinkedIn, we don't come across on Twitter. These are the guys in the bedroom, maybe with an employee or two, maybe even with a good handful of employees, but are doing things the way that they've always done it. They haven't embraced online in any way, shape or form. They still believe HMRC won't go through with making tax digital. They're getting price pressure downwards. They are going to struggle. So for them, the profession's looking pretty bleak. You've on the polar opposite of that, you've got the firms who are really doing something different. They're building their own IP. They've already embraced cloud. You know, cloud isn't some new thing that's coming in. They embraced it 10 years ago. They're looking at solutions that can look towards automating the compliance process so they can deliver more value. You know, those guys are relatively well placed, either to be sweeping up the clients of the others or to grow their fee base by tweaking their average client fee. And then I mentioned there's two or three. I guess there's a middle ground, who are coming in despite the internal conflicts. So these are the ones with a broken partnership model, where some of the younger partners are seeing what can be done and they're dragging the older partners reluctantly into the 21st century. Now, these ones tend also to be the bigger firms, and they are the ones that might well acquire the fees of the ones that can't do it.
Carl, do you see much difference between the larger firms and the smaller firms? Obviously, more resource, more money, bigger accounts and everything. But are there any other key differences?
Yes, there are. Obviously, resourcing in terms of financing is a big difference. The challenge when you're a bigger firm is that you can start with a blank canvas, but it's got your firm's letterhead on it. What I mean by that is it's got your team members, it's got your systems, it's got your processes. And it's very hard to chuck that all away and start with something fresh. Mm-hmm. Particularly when meeting payroll at the end of the month relies on business running as normal. Whilst we hear these people saying, you know, do this, scrap timesheets, move everyone 100% cloud, that's all great in principle. And as a new firm, you could start by building round the technology that's there. But in an existing firm, if you do that and you go with an extremely gung-ho approach, the challenge that you have is that accountants are generally resistant to change. So they will do everything they can to hold up the process and to frustrate the process and ultimately make it more expensive from a time and cost perspective than it needs to be. So small practices have a real difference compared to large practices in that they can start and they can say, right, we don't need to think about the legacy packages that we've got. So the legacy desktop practice management system and the legacy desktop patches our clients have got. What's best in class? What can we start with from day one? and they can build out their solution on today's technology rather than inheriting a solution together with the processes and systems and teams and training based on yesterday's technology. On the flip side, I would suggest that larger firms are perhaps more intelligent when it comes to approaching these solutions and project managing it. That only comes through maturity and having made mistakes along the way. Some newer practices might be naive and will dive in with the first option that they see or hear of, whereas larger firms would tend to put more due diligence in.
So what, in your view, Carl, separates the good firms from the great ones of all sizes?
I think an absolute clarity on what it is that clients want. And trust me, it's not what we think they want. It's not preparing the accounts and the tax returns. However, many firms feel that that is still the key value differentiator they've got. That's the first thing. Absolutely clear values, vision, mission. They know where they're going as a firm. The very first thing. The second thing is openness for change. Look, accounting has changed more in the last 5 years than it has in the last 17, 18 years. But it's changed more than I've ever seen in a short period of time. The third thing is a laser sharp focus on what clients they want. So not taking anything and everything. So whether it's a focus on a niche or a certain size of business or a certain type of business owner, I think that's absolutely key so that they don't become part of a me too. And finally, probably the biggest challenge for most firms, and then in turn on the flip side, the biggest advantage for firms that are great, is a realization they're in business, not in practice. So they're not a practicing accountant, they're running a business that provides accountancy right. services. So that mindset shift, using Gerber's phrase of technician to manager to entrepreneur, or if we use Kiyosaki from self-employed to business owner, whichever way we want to frame it, that mindset shift that we're running a business rather than running a professional practice, I think is absolutely key.
Well, what does that do if you change that mindset?
Okay, so that mindset shift allows you, first of all, to live the life that you want to live, not the life that your clients want you to live. Look, if you're the technician and you're doing all the work and you're reliant on your own hourly charge, if I was reliant on my hourly fees myself, then if I get run over by a bus, my income dies. It's a real issue. So by separating yourself from that, it allows you to live a life that's a bit more flexible. It allows you to live a life on your own terms rather than your clients' demands. What it also allows you to do is to grow beyond yourself. So rather than clients coming in looking for you as a sole practitioner or as a partner in a bigger partnership, they look for your team. It's a challenge to try and turn it round. You know, D&T, when I first joined and started the process, was only 8 employees and it was very much partner driven. So it takes some time to educate your clients that you don't know everything. But after a point, you hit that critical mass of clients understanding. And actually, you end up realizing that you're not so good after all, and the team that you've employed are actually better at you than most of the staff than you are.
How has the way firms win business and build their client base changed over the last few years?
So I can comment on what we do. You know, we've got 74 different streams of marketing that we get clients through. Now, certainly 10 years ago, firms would have their budget cards, they would have their website, possibly. They might add an email marketing list, but that was pretty much it. But we've got 74 different streams of new clients. The marketing has changed substantially. Internet marketing is obviously key. Social media has been a big thing. Pay-per-click's been a big thing. And also not just as a direct lead gen, but also as brand awareness. But moving away from the lead gen side of things, we also need to look at lead conversion. What we've done is we've got to a point where we very rarely meet new clients. New clients are actually handled by our onboarding team. There's no face-to-face meeting. They come to us through our pull marketing. So they want to buy at the point they speak to us. They get converted by our onboarding team. And we instead devote that time into training to make sure that they follow the systems and processes that make our life easier and allow us to keep our compliance fees competitive. So that's a change that we've done. Now, whether that's across the board, I can't answer that, Rob. But certainly from a lead gen perspective, the move towards online, the move towards social media, et cetera, I think is it's a general shift across the industry rather than just in our firm.
So you think that even with the larger firms, when you mentioned lead gen, you didn't talk about networking, referrals, face-to-face, putting on events. Is that going out for you or is that still part of the mix?
So that all still happens. That's all part of the mix. Yeah, if we were to look at some of the big things that we do, one of the biggest areas has been PR. So we focus PR in terms of national press. We focus PR locally in terms of trade press, but also social media content creation. Now, content creation then hooks us into keynote speaking. So we offer keynote sessions for our clients and our referrers on a basis of no fee, but you give us exposure and an expo stand, et cetera, et cetera. So that works really well. We look at networking. It works to an extent. However, most accountants do it horrifically badly. and they see it as an excuse to catch up with the bank manager who they saw at the last networking event, and they don't actually speak to anyone who's going to provide them with any benefit. On the flip side, you get the business card merchants who go around trying to stab everyone with their business cards. It's very rare that I found an accountancy practice, or indeed an accountant within an accountancy practice, to approach networking as a with the concept of, look, I'm going to turn up and make some mates and just see what comes out of it. And they're probably not going to buy from me, but I'm just going to get to know them. So networking is something that we do. However, it's not something that we look to rely on. Referrals, there's obviously referral processes for existing clients. I'll hold my hands up. Whilst we do get referrals, both organic and also proactive, we haven't sorted out our systems as well as we could. So those traditional methods still work. It's just that for the scale of growth that we're achieving and that we want to continue achieving versus the number of clients we've got, so on a percentage basis, it's very high. And I don't believe that we'd be able to achieve that purely through networking, purely through referral marketing. I think that it needs so many more streams of new clients.
Yeah. What's the worst advice or doctrine you've seen being dispensed in the accounting profession?
I mean, first of all, there's a lot of advisors out there who haven't done it. So what they've done, they've taken systems that they've seen work whilst they've worked in firms that might be accountancy firms, might not be accountancy firms, and have presumed that it's a copy and paste. Accountants are a bit of a strange breed, let's be honest. And I can say that because I'm an accountant myself. Typically mid-level S, high-level C on the DISC profile, typically resistant to change, typically introverted, and typically enjoy the status quo. To try and take a process that's worked in a business that might not have those people and then to try and implement it within the accountancy world is a bit of a problem when it's applied untested. So that's a challenge. In terms of specific bits of advice, I believe that there's across the board of advisors, and I include the good, the bad, and the ugly in that, there's a perhaps blinkered belief that cloud accounting is going to solve every problem within the industry. And it's absolutely not. Look, cloud accounting is a tool. You don't convert your, let's say, you don't convert your carpentry business from struggling to great by buying a new saw. And that's all cloud accounting is. It's a newer tool. But yes, it allows you to change the nature of your relationship. But if you've got a crap business underneath, you're still going to have a crap business. If you're reluctant to change, you're still going to be reluctant to change. There's no one product or technology development or service that's going to transform any practice. No magic bullets. That's another bad bit of advice that I see given.
But then that's part of the practice, the vendor's problems, because they sell their solutions, don't they, Carl? It's the solution to all ills and problems.
Of course, when you're selling a product and you're passionate about it, you really believe that it's transformative. But without the action around it, nothing's going to change. So look, again, we take our carpenter example. Look, if I sell a carpenter a new saw and he doesn't take action, he doesn't take it out of the toolbox, let alone use it properly, then you know what? It's not going to do him any good whatsoever, no matter how good that product is. So yes, it could be deemed to be partly the vendor's problem, but it's also on implementation.
Carl, what in your view makes a high performer in a professional accounting firm?
Okay, so I think that's changed significantly in the last 20 years. So previously, it would be living up to those personality traits of stability and compliance. It would be adding up the numbers correctly. I think that now that a lot of this stuff's been automated, look, 20 years ago, people were doing extended trial balances with pen and paper rather than using computer systems. Nowadays, now that all that stuff's automated, it's not about the technical skills whatsoever, because they can be outsourced, they can be automated. That stuff is pretty much irrelevant now. It comes down to a couple of things. It comes down to being a very good translator. Being able to translate complicated stuff, whether it's tax law, whether it's accountancy disclosures, whether it's business advice, into plain English. So you need to be able to translate what it is that you do, the value that you've bought, into plain English that an eight-year-old can understand. That's one of the very first things. The second thing, I believe, is more around the general soft skills and being a people person and being able to relate to people both internally and externally. And the third thing, we can't get away from it, is being someone who's a rainmaker, someone who can actually bring new work to the practice rather than relying on someone else feeding. I believe those are the three key attributes that you need. I'm going to go off on a tangent again here, Rob. When we look to hire, we used to make the mistakes of hiring on skills and then firing on attitude. Okay, it's a mistake every firm makes. We've actually now got a three-step process. So there's three questions that we ask, decreasing in importance. The first one is, will they do the job? The second one is, will they fit in? Only then do we ask, can they do the job? You know, that's pretty irrelevant because we can teach them the skills.
How coachable do you feel accountants are as a race, as a breed, Carl?
Okay, so trainable, absolutely. But we need to look at what it is that we're either training or coaching them in. If we're training them in technical skills, yeah, that's what they came into it for, because typically accountants fall into the technician mentality. So they want to do their job, but to do it better and have that constant improvement. That's what gives them the pat on the back. When it comes to the stuff that's needed from a modern day accountant or the future accountant, I'm not so sure that that's trainable. Because I think some of it comes down to personality, and we can't train personality. Some of it comes down to attitude, and you know, we can try and discipline bad behavior, but you can't, you know, you can't force motivation onto someone. I think that there's some certain basics that can be taught, but also a good proportion of this has to come from within them, whether it's from motivation or whether it's from who they are themselves.
Carl, this is brilliant. Let's get your crystal ball out. Tell us what's coming up for the accounting profession over the next few years.
Okay, so my belief is that there's a few major disruptions. I believe that one of the cloud bookkeeping providers are sitting on, in fact, I think they're all sitting on the big red button that allows clients to file their accounts and tax returns themselves. That's pretty obvious. You've got to be naive to think that these big firms who particularly, I mean, Intuit are an interesting case, Sage are an interesting case, because both of them are rooted in the accountant-client partnership and using accountants as a channel. Oh, sorry, using accountants as a partner. Those who use accountants as a channel, who might potentially be acquired at some point, yeah, like we saw with Free Agent, those ones, it makes their business so much more valuable if they put that red button out for everyone to press it. So that's the first big thing. Look, compliance can absolutely be automated. There's no magic to preparing a set of accounts. It's a flowcharted process, and it can be mapped out. It can be systemized. I don't think that it's something that needs AI to happen. I think it's something that can happen pretty much overnight. So I would suggest that that is going to be a very big change. I don't know when that will kick in, but it will kick in at some point. Clearly, Making Tax Digital is just the start of the increased digitalization. We shouldn't hang on to the fact that it's only going to be clients over VAT limit. It's going to be everyone. We are moving towards a cashless society. We are looking for moving forwards towards where HMRC have complete visibility over anything and everything on every individual. That's something that's going to happen as well. I think that transparency for larger businesses is becoming more and more key. So I think that we'll see some changes around transparency and financial disclosure. But also, I think that there'll be a genuine move within the industry away from simply financial advisory towards more general business advisory. So this is something we've kicked off with our new business advisory team. It's one thing advising a client on the historics. It's another advising them on the future financials. But really, business owners need advice on a wide range of things. And the accountant tends to have the most trusted relationship. So I actually see the accountant's role moving towards being more of a rounded business advisor rather than just a financial advisor, using the numbers as a platform for that advice, but not the extent of that advice.
This is brilliant, Carl. I just want to deep. What do you love most about what you do? You're such a passionate guy. It really comes out.
Okay, so what do I love most about what I do? So look, our vision and our trademark strapline is adding value, not numbers. That came to me as a bolt of inspiration. And that's what we love doing, is the fact that we can do something different than just adding up numbers. So serving our stakeholders, making sure that our team members, then our clients and our markets we serve, then our industry and community, making sure they're all looked after. We've got a great platform for change here.
What thinker, book or movement has most shaped your philosophy for life and business?
So originally it was Michael E. Gerber, The E-Myth Revisited. However, I now contend a lot of that. I would say Tim Ferriss in The 4-Hour Work Week from a personal and a business perspective. It's a very good book. Being able to realize there's a life outside of a 9-to-5, both for yourself and your employees and your clients, making sure that you can see that, you know, life doesn't have to be as you've told it needs to be. You've actually got freedom to do what you want when you want. So that feeling of ownership and control over my life, then in turn over my business, etc., that's been amazingly beneficial for me.
Is there anything you believe deeply that other people think is crazy?
Loads of stuff. Southend United are going to win the Premiership.
Oh, yeah. what have you changed your mind on over the last few years, Carl, and why?
Look, suffering from ADHD, I have more ideas before breakfast than most people have in a lifetime. So shiny object syndrome, you know, that's me. And I can very often change course. So I've changed opinion on a lot of things. It comes down to advisory. and the move away from GRF. When a lot of experts 10 years ago were saying that the model of GRF is dead and you shouldn't be relying on recurring fees, I thought they were ridiculous because, you know, we keep our clients for 10 years. We take on a client who's worth $5,000, that means it's worth $50,000, everyone's happy. Now, our business is still heavily GRF focused, but I really do believe that, you know what, they had something in it, because where you can really build your business beyond just a factory is looking at advisory projects, value-based billing and so on. So that's something that I have changed my mind on.
And what frustrates you most about the accounting profession?
So look, there's a lot of frustrations, but there's something great that we can all do. We need to work out what that great thing is, because I don't think we have yet. I think that we're being blinded by the changes and how the world is changing. So we're adopting technology to try and keep up. But we as a group aren't pushing forwards. And that's something that we need to do. We need to identify what is it that we can deliver for good to our clients.
Yeah. Carl, I'm going to ask you to finish in a moment with the best piece of advice you've ever been given for your career. But just before we do that, if people want to learn more about Carl Reeder, the keynote speaker and the personality, or D&T accountants, how might they get in touch?
First stop is www.carlreeder.com, C-A-R-L-R-E-A-D-E-R. I'm fairly visible on social media, again, Carl Reeder, on most of the platforms, so Snapchat, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all of the usual suspects. So advice, best advice I've ever been given. I've got to where I am through a combination of all the advice I've been given along the way, but I'm actually going to go back to some advice that I was given by my dad, and this was probably when I was about 14 and just about to do work experience at school, which was to keep a good file of facts of everyone's details that you ever meet, because you never know when you might need them. Now, obviously, it ain't a file of facts anymore, but I make sure that I try and keep hold of everyone's details, because even if I don't need them, someone else might.
Carl Reeder, that's been a whirlwind tour of passion and huge insight for the accounting profession. It's been world class. Thanks so much for your time today.
No, Rob, it's been an absolute pleasure, and I'd like to thank your listeners as well. Thank you.
You've been listening to Accounting Influencers, the podcast for accounting leaders and influencers who want to know exactly what makes the good firms great and the great accountants world class. For show notes on today's and other episodes, plus some great blogs and resources to help accountants lead, sell, and perform at the highest levels, go to bdacademy.pro. Until next time, have a fantastic day.